We've decided to bring this episode of Nearly Sacred to you commercial-free with the exception of this commercial. You can find us and supplies that we sell at alchemyemporiumshop.com. www.alchemyemporiumshop.com. Hello and welcome to Nearly Sacred, Episode 7. I'm your host, Joe Bell Schertzinger, along with...
Melissa Sims.
We're back in the saddle again.
Yeah.
This time we're recharged with a lot more Nearly Sacred.
Yeah, this is like Matrix 2.
That's right. We're brought to you still by Alchemy.
All right. Yeah, Alchemy.
That's right. We're going to take a break now, though.
We had some hardcore Alchemy.
We did. We're going to tell you about it.
Oh, Lord.
So, we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back.
Right on.
And we're back. And as we were discussing, we don't really have any guests today because Melissa and I have been through what I would like to call a metaphysical shitstorm.
I call it the crucible.
The crucible. Well, I think in the old alchemical text, I would just call it shitstorm, but I would put it with like fancy S's and scripts. Nobody knew what I was saying. But many alchemists would go, oh, this must be the shitstorm version of
alchemy. We know where you're at now, dude.
That's right. There for a while, I didn't know.
No.
So where to begin? I mean, should we begin with our process, or should we comment on the world at large?
I don't even know. That's what I said. What are we going to talk about? Because I don't even know. I have no idea. The only closest thing I could say is we could probably back it up to my trip to France.
Okay, let's do that.
That could probably give us some ground. We might have to make this a two-parter because it's massive.
Okay. So go ahead. Stop talking about how massive it is and start telling the story.
Well, basically, last September, I took a wee little jaunt over the ocean to Scotland and to France.
Right. We interviewed Stuart.
Right. And it was an interesting trip. Scotland was very, very fun. It was normal in every right. We went to, like, normal things. Pubs. Ate fish and chips.
I remember that like it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, it does feel like 3 years ago now. And went to like see the museums and such, and there you go. It was a trip. It's cool. Then I went to France.
Yeah, that wasn't really a scheduled stop originally, but it kind of wound up that way.
It wasn't normal at all. In any shape or form, that whole south of France, let me just say this. I'm not going to get into too many details because there's people that I don't want to involve that I haven't talked to about revealing things that we did or did not do, but I don't have the permission. But I will say some few moments of things that I did experience and what my experience was like when I got back. So one of the experiences I had was, well, it was unusual to even begin with because when I came, my taxi driver's tires were slashed. That was unusual.
Yeah, that's always a popular way. Welcome to the country.
Right.
Viva la revolution.
That was a little unusual, and I don't even know why. Who knows? In the bigger scheme, we might know something else, but we'll start here. And we made it our way to where we were staying, and the place we stayed was very interesting and very lovely during the daytime. At nighttime, it became another place. It became very frightening.
After midnight,
I mean, literally, like I wouldn't leave. We would not leave the premises. Like, we wouldn't even open the door. There's one day I went to open the door, and there was something standing outside, and it ran off, and it was large, and I don't know what it was.
It's probably just Satan. I wouldn't worry about it.
I'm not doubting that a bit after this experience. I'm pretty sure it was something like that with hooves or something. I don't know. But anyway, it was very strange how during the day it was very beautiful. It was the most beautiful place I've ever seen. And at night it would take on this whole other feeling of, I mean, we were just in complete fear, like, at night. It was very odd.
It's like a bar at closing time.
No, it's
like a metaphysical bar.
Yeah, it was something. It wasn't right. Like, so,
like a raincoat guy standing
we did
there.
Make it up to Renly Chateau, and I was shown a few things there that were interesting. I got to see some things other people dream of seeing, but the story is that place has an energy vortex up there, and I absolutely know it does because I stood in it. I was shown exactly where that vortex was, and I stood in this vortex.
When you say energy vortex, you might need to clarify that.
Well, it's a place where energy, it's almost like where, you know, humans have chakras. You know, we have energy vortexes inside us in a small way.
Say what?
Right. So each chakra is its own energy producing vortex. A vortex is like, you know, like a tornado, right? But it's energy. So.
Gotcha. Tornado.
Yeah, kind of a tornado of energy that you can't see with your eyes.
Which we've had a lot of here lately.
Yeah, weirdly. So, but anyway, there's a vortex, and there's stories about, there's something they call Rennie madness. And, you know, it's kind of like we all laugh it off and everything, but it's quite real, actually. It's very real over there. And they believe that what happens is when people come up on top of this, where Renly Chateau is on top of this mountain, that this energy vortex basically starts to reveal what is deep inside of you. So if you're a healer, you become a more powerful healer. If you're crazy, you become more crazy. If you're whatever, you know, it just makes you more of whatever you are, just amplifies it. So, we had a lovely time and saw some interesting things. But the most interesting thing around that area that I saw at that time was we were preparing to go to this opera. And I sat outside and I saw what looked like streams of rainbows coming from the sun down to the ground. And at first I thought I had smudges on my glasses, but then I took my glasses off and realized that I was actually seeing these rainbow light coming down all the way to the ground, and I looked up towards the sun and I was able to stare directly into the sun.
That's unusual.
A little bit. And I stared at it for a good 15 minutes and was seeing like a black cauldron inside the sun. And that's went on, and I never saw a spot. My eyes didn't spot. I didn't go blind. And I felt like that was quite unusual and that I was having some sort of experience.
It sounds like the black sun.
Yeah. And so other people saw it as well. So it wasn't just me. There was other witnesses. But it reminded me kind of how you hear those really weird stories, like when Mary shows up and, you know, that weird stuff happens, you know, in Catholic churches, like Lourdes and all of that. The water there smelled like flowers. I mean, it was all that stuff that they talk about. And it was clearly happening, you know, quite in real time for me. We did a couple other things. We made our way to Mount Segur, where I had an experience where I lost time. Don't even know how much time was lost the under the super moon.
Blood moon.
Yeah, it was a blood moon. But well, we were up there right before the blood moon, actually, but we left before the blood moon.
It's probably actually, just as well.
Well, yeah. I think now, knowing what I know now, yeah. So, but anyway, it was extremely beautiful, but there was some very strange things. We saw the moon flare, which was unusual. I mean, literally it flared out. And then we experienced the moon moving too quickly. Like, so there was probably some lost time there. I'm not sure how much went by, maybe a few hours. I don't know.
Well, incidentally, this is when those gravitational black holes are blowing up
right
exact same time. So.
Yeah. So I got hit with whatever up there. I don't know exactly what happened, but there were some other things. There were many other things that happened. But the result was this. When I came home, I mean, I was exhausted. Remember when you picked me up from the airport?
That was awesome, yeah.
Yeah, I was absolutely exhausted. And been traveling for many, many hours. I was done. So when I came home, the first few days were very strange. I slept strangely, which I just attributed to jet lag. And I was hearing music all the time playing, like in the background, off in a distance.
We should qualify and say that psychologically you're all right, right? Mostly.
Yeah, I mean, most people might question that, but I've never, let's put it this way, I've never had these experiences before. I might have seen strange things here and there, but this was quite something else.
Your mystics have seen it, though.
Yes, this is a very mystical kind of state, but I would hear voices talking, like people talking in the other room, but there was nobody there. I would wait when I woke up out of a dead sleep, or I'd, you know, in the morning I'd sit up and I'd look around. I was not in my room. I was not in this house. I don't know what dimension I was in, but I was seeing something, clearly something else, which is interesting because this is a phenomenon that happens with people who are blind. It's an actual phenomenon. I had a friend who was, her name was Lurline de Saint-Germain. She would have this experience as well, where she would wake up. She was blind, but she was like in this room and she could see it clearly. She could tell you the wallpaper, the floor, everything. It was kind of the same thing for me as well, except it wasn't a modern place. It was someplace dark. It almost was like a castle. That's the only way I could describe it. And when I looked over, you were laying next to me.
Yep.
But it wasn't you. It didn't look like you anyway. And what I said, somebody said that, I said, who is this? And somebody said, this is a magician king.
Hell yeah.
Right. So, but as soon as I would touch you, the whole, that reality would snap back in. I mean, real reality would snap back in.
Just for the record, I'm not a magician king.
Right.
But
it is. If you were.
Right. If I were. There is a lot to be said for the old Merovingian stuff that was going on over there who were magician kings.
Right. Yeah. But I didn't at the time. It wasn't like I was sitting there thinking, I'm going to wake up and wish Joe Bill was a magician king.
That's
like,
right.
It was like, but it was like happening. Now, the problem is that was okay. I mean, I could attribute that all to jet lag and all this, you know, stuff that went on. But the problem was that it went on for 3 weeks solid.
Right.
I couldn't even function. I had a hard time going into the shop. Like, people who saw me, they could hardly be in the, like a lot of people said, they couldn't even be in the same room with me because my energy was so, I don't know. What was it, Joe Bill? Like, I mean, I didn't experience it, so.
Well, I believe those old mountains are for initiation, amongst other things. You know, I think there's a lot of things going on that particular mountain. But initiation stuff has a way of waking up your kundalini, whether you want it awake or not. And so this is the reason why there used to be guides for that kind of thing, so that when you would have these experiences, there would be somebody there to be kind of like, hey, you know, you're not a magician king. I mean, you are, but you're not. So there's...
Well, but what would you... How would you describe my energy?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it was... It seemed like it was trying to open up other people, would be the way that I would put it. Like, it was trying to pry open kundalini on people. And it was very... Like, as it would start to be talked about, it was like... It would pick it up in the environment. And it was kind of a... It was almost too much energy. Almost like shouldn't be spoken about all the way sort of thing. Like, I don't know. It was interesting.
Oh, so that's what it felt like to you.
Well, it's like the words would accelerate the process, because it's like people's consciousness were grasping through you what you went through. And so, this all sounds very new agey, but, you know, in the old traditions, if a master went somewhere, they would pass on the blessing to the disciples.
Okay.
So, I think some process were like that was happening, but as we know now, Montsegur was sort of a... It's kind of got a deathy overture to it, because a lot of those French stuff, it's underworldy, deathy, goddessy stuff. So I think that energy carries some interesting residual to it, in the sense that any time that you're in the underworld, most of us are in the underworld.
Like, well, I think we all are in the underworld, right. Personally.
I would say the vast
majority. We'll get to that in a minute.
The vast majority of us are in the underworld. We just believe we're in the above world.
Right. It's an illusion.
So I think what was happening is that it was sort of serving to remind people of that on some level or another.
Yeah, well, it reminded me to a real level I don't want to really experience again, because I didn't know if I was ever really going to come out of that state. You know, I thought I was in this hypnagogic state for ever. I didn't know that it was ever going to normalize.
Yeah, but if you think about it, if you look at, say, now versus then, it's like everyone is in a hypnagogic state.
Yes. Kinda. Yes, that's exactly right.
Everyone was hypnagogic fighting.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll move forward. So that went on. And then what, Joe Bill?
Then what?
Where do we go next? Where do you want to start? When did this... What started to happen? What was the process that started to happen for you? And then I started to see it. Well, it started turning in.
There's always a sense of sort of unease for me a little bit with a lot of this stuff, because it wasn't so much that it was... I enjoyed the aspect of the ancient side of it. However, there was always a bit of a kind of a, you know, it wasn't always comforting. I'll put it to you that way. There was sort of a sense of weird burden that I couldn't place fully. And in my life, that isn't necessarily totally unusual, but I started kind of getting this vibe like something wasn't quite right, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was. So I had many pieces in place, but I could not see fully what was occurring. Like, there were little subtle changes that started happening, and I could feel interesting, like it was a kind of a pressure, would be the way I would describe it. Like, there was just a pressure that internally kept mounting along with a feeling of
like anxiety.
Yeah, it's kind of like anxiety, but sort of an anxiety where it's like, you know, it sort of felt like you may be here, you may not be here. The only way I know how to describe it, but that's not unusual for me because I've already done that once in my life. So
it felt like you were going to die.
At one point in there was a moment where that was the case, but it was more like there was a sense of increased sacrifice that was going to have to be made. Like, that's the only way I know how to put it. Like, it was like there's an increased sense of you will have to sacrifice to help Melissa, to help protect Melissa, to help the people that are coming involved with it. There's going to be a sense of increased sacrifice.
Why? Why did you feel that way? Or
I couldn't put my finger on it, but I mean, throughout my life, there's always been sort of a sense of sacrifice. It's just a matter of the number of people and the requests that have been made, you know, of it. And I couldn't really quite relate why that it was the case. I just simply felt it. And then there was a whole lot of weird energy, in part because of the world, I think, in hindsight, doing what it's been doing. But there was a lot of weird energy out here with people behaving more erratically than normal, you know. So
we started seeing something. What we started to see, I mean, this process has been it's so intricate, and there's so many pieces of the puzzle that I wouldn't even begin to know how many pieces to throw out there. But basically, what I would say started to happen is we started seeing a constellation form. And it was after the David Bowie stuff, really, when that hit. Like, it really started to take on.
I would say we didn't see it so much as we experienced it.
Right.
Which is a much different thing.
Well, it started forming in our face.
To see it is one thing. To see it, you go, oh, yeah, I see that. To have it in your face where you're in the middle of it is quite different.
Right. It started really happening. I saw an uptick after the David Bowie thing, after we did that show and started making some connections there and to France and to sacrifices and the dark goddess.
It turned out that my theories were absolutely right, except for one little thing that I overlooked.
What's that?
Those old rites. Well, number one, the French mysteries, I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out there, are largely bullshit. Would you agree with that?
No. It was very real.
What I'm saying is the allure of the French mysteries, like all of the stuff they talk about.
What you mean to say is that it's bullshit in the sense that you'll never find the end of it.
Right.
Because it keeps looping you around on a rabbit chase that leads you deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and farther and farther. And what it is in the end is a soul trap. That's what we figured out. The labyrinth is a soul trap.
It's bullshit designed to keep you hooked into it. So you keep trying to figure it out, and you keep trying to figure it out, and you keep trying to figure it out. And in reality, you're not really supposed to figure it out.
No.
Because there's nothing to figure out, per se. There are things to understand, but once you understand the thing, then there's nothing left to figure out. Do you agree with that?
Right, sort of. I mean,
it's like running around in a labyrinth and you're like, huh, I don't know where I am. I guess I just need to keep running around this labyrinth. I don't know where I am. And then finally you realize, oh, this is a labyrinth.
Right.
The nature of a labyrinth is...
Then when you once realize that you're stuck in this labyrinth, it's kind of frightening because you can't find your way out.
Right. And the labyrinth keeps shifting around to keep you in it.
It keeps moving. It keeps shifting. That's why they use a labyrinth for the... That's why it's in those French mysteries, as well as the chessboard. We figured out, you know, basically that it is a game. This whole system is a game. And this isn't, I mean, when I say French mysteries, it's not just French mysteries. It's the whole world.
It's the whole world. Anything that's like a mystery that people really get into at this point, I would say the vast majority of it is bullshit in the sense that it's just another labyrinth of a different variety.
Right. Trying to keep you twined up.
So like Oak Island or any of that stuff, there's lots of different mysteries that are out there that people get obsessive about. And more than likely, there's kind of I might say there's sort of a sinister twist in there a lot of the times, designed to almost get you lost. Do you agree with that?
Right. Well, I think it is, but at the same time, it's, you know, the ego is what drags you into it, because everybody's looking to find the next breakthrough, right? All these people are running over there. They're, you know, trying to find this breakthrough of this thing or that thing, and they're the first ones to understand this code. And I've been involved in this stuff with my friend Stuart and just studying on my own for... I don't know.
And I would say that time. I would say all those codes and everything are there and they're relevant. They just don't matter so much in the end.
In the end, they don't. But okay, so things started amping up for us. So what started everything what happened is we started to be able to, what we call is the, read the code so well, which is the code when she went, because we went through all this mystery stuff, there's all kinds of little pieces and there's constellations and you can point to, you know, all the different kinds of things like the labyrinth, the chess chessboard, queens and kings and the Bible's involved in this and they mix it all up together.
Yeah, it's one great big stew.
You start mixing it up with actually studying alchemy and the process of alchemy, and it all starts to get mixing together into this big puzzle that's like pieces mixed together. But what started happening is we were able to start to uncode things, just like with the David Bowie thing, you were able to start to see and you start putting all these pieces together. But then what happened was is we couldn't escape that story. We'd turn on the TV, there was the story again. We'd turn the radio on, the song would be alluding to the same story. People would come into the store and they were seeing the same things we were seeing. They were talking about the same things we were talking about.
And that was when it started lightly.
That was the beginning, but then it started to progress into it. And so what happened is it was as if mass consciousness, that's what it had become. It had just become this one big story, telling the same story over and over again, and we were able to see it. We saw it so well that it took notice of it, and then it looked at us, and that's when we got in trouble.
And that is where we're going to take a break. And we're back. I think I want to start this segment off, you know, we give you that cliffhanger where it's like, and then, duh, 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 duh.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's where we get in trouble. So I want to throw in a little bit of Nietzsche here, because there's a quote by Nietzsche that says, if you stare into the abyss stares into you.
Yeah.
And Nietzsche famously lost his shit. Like, he went catatonic, and he was caught up in Dionysus and stuff, amongst other things. Which turns out kind of plays a role in all this stuff.
Well, yeah, it does. It all is Dionysian in the end.
Yes, and so this initiation, I would say a lot of that stuff is an initiation path for that old way of doing things. So let me preface this before you begin where we're going to get into trouble. I want to go back in time for a minute. Way back, it used to be the case that if you had a tribe, you would be you would have shamans, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And those shamans would be appointed with the task of basically interfacing between the spirit world and this world.
Mm-hmm.
And your job was sort of like a spirit lawyer, right?
Right. So, spirit lawyer.
Nobody wanted the job of spirit lawyer.
No, everybody hates spirit lawyers.
Like, there was actually people in the tribe, they would see like rocks on the ground. They're like, uh-uh, I'm not picking that up because I do not want to be a spirit lawyer.
I know now why.
They're like, no way. Because all shamanic journeys usually involves some pretty good-sized trauma. Yes, would you agree with that?
Yep.
So then once you experience the trauma of the shamanic journey, then you're charged with alleviating the trauma of everybody else in your tribe.
Right.
So you've got wisdom, you know medicine, but guess what? Now your job is to suffer on behalf of your tribe. So
who wants to do that?
The resume description for shaman looks pretty shitty. Spiritual lawyer is not real appealing for the most part.
Nobody wants to do that.
Because it's pretty rough. And in the
it's more
end,
like scapegoat.
And in the exactly. In the end, if it's required that your people are bad enough, guess what's happened to the shaman?
He gets it.
No more shaman. Shaman.
He becomes sacrificed.
Shaman sacrificed to the tree, which makes him just like who?
Jesus.
No, I don't know if I know that name all the way.
Well, we'll get to that, but we're going to say that for now.
Yeah, it makes him similar to the story of Jesus. So it's a form of shamanism that kicks in there, and all of a sudden you are in the middle of it. And these old initiation paths, I think, from back in the day are designed for Greek and Egyptian reasons, the ones that Melissa went through. Perhaps other people have set up on top of them in different time periods and try to do different things with them, but they resonate to that very heavily.
Right.
So continue on, Melissa. We got into trouble. In what way?
Well, it just started to get to where, how do you even describe this?
Let me try. Imagine that you like Wonder Bread and you start noticing all the qualities of the packaging of Wonder Bread and you're like, huh, Wonder Bread is a very nice brand. I like the label on it and everything. And you start kind of looking at it, and you're like, it's made in this date. And you start really getting inside Wonder Bread.
This is a good way to, the date it's made, the ingredients,
the texture. And you're like,
the packaging, the colors, the words, the letters.
You're like, man, I really love Wonder Bread. Right. And you start to kind of realize, like, other companies have kind of adopted the branding of Wonder Bread. Like this company over here, which is Kraft, secretly has kind of taken Wonder Bread. By the way, we're not endorsing either of these products.
But no.
Just for the record, they've taken some of the products and they've kind of mimicked it. So then you kind of go, I'm sensing a Wonder Bready tie to the Kraft.
Mm-hmm.
And you start analyzing it, and sure enough, the numbers add up, and you're right. There is a Wonder Bready Crafty tie, and you're
figure it out.
Like, huh? Well, that's pretty neat. And you look on the website, and they say Wonder Bread, also a division of Kraft.
Oh.
And you're like,
made a connection.
I made a connection. It's got a hit, and now I know something that was hidden before.
Right.
Then you start connecting it into Kraft,
and then you start looking at all the people that work at Kraft,
right,
and the head, and that own Kraft, and that own right. Wonder Bread, and then you start digging deeper.
And if you're in these mystery traditions, pretty quick, like it turns out that Kraft people, and they don't actually do this, but they secretly seem to have a lot of people mysteriously die. Dun 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 dun. It's like a horror movie.
Right.
So now you've got a Wonder Bread to Kraft to why are people dying that work at Kraft connection.
Right.
So you start kind of going, okay, well maybe Kraft, maybe there's something more there. So you start studying it and you're like, okay, Wonder Bread to Kraft to people dying. And then you start concluding, there's a Hershey tie-in. Let's go to Pennsylvania.
So you go to Pennsylvania, you go to the factory.
You go to the factory and you actually get a trip to Pennsylvania, and you get to go into the underground basement of the Pennsylvania Hershey factory.
And you get to meet the people that are like
in it
hardcore.
So now your Wonder Bread experience has branched out to many corporate brands, and you're starting to really, really, really understand how the hierarchy of all this little thing that you loved connects to lots of other things.
Right.
So if you do that enough, eventually you're going to understand almost like the psychic building block or something of craftness, of Wonder Breadness, of
right, you get to see the secret recipes and everything.
Right, but it turns out that when you see that secret recipe, you step outside, you're like, okay, well, I'll solve that. Your job's not done, because you walk outside, and what do you see? A Wonder Bread truck. And you're like, oh, well, that's different.
That's unusual.
Maybe it's just because I've been thinking about Wonder Bread.
I'm 5,000 miles away, and all of a sudden I'm seeing it show up here. That's really weird.
And then pretty soon you're like, I'd like to move somewhere else. I don't know. Maybe I'm going to go to like Hawaii on a very remote island in the middle of the Pacific. And then you look up and behold, Wonder Bread truck.
You turn on the TV.
Wonder Bread. Everywhere you go.
Listen to the radio. Wonder Bread.
And then pretty soon it starts to be like, Kraft. People kill themselves. Wonder Bread.
All the games.
Right. Kraft. People kill themselves. And Wonder Bread. And you're like, this is getting a little bit weird. So you decide, well, I'm just going to get like a video game. I'm going to zone out for a little while.
Right.
So you get the video game and you turn it on. And what happens? But Wonder Bread at the start screen, and you're like, this is getting unsettling.
Well, it gets worse when you check the news.
Yeah, you check the news, and it's like, today in Wonder Bread land. So
it's funny now, but at the time it was not funny.
I'm making light of this, but
it was serious business.
It is not light.
It was not light.
I mean, you could say to yourself,
but wait, when you drive down the highway and every car that passes has a Wonder Bread sticker,
every third car is Wonder Bread. Then pretty soon you start going, what the living shit have I gotten myself into? I simply liked Wonder Bread.
Yeah.
And the answer is that once you go on that shamanic path, there ain't no getting out of it. Because you were always doing it anyway. You were always doing it. You just didn't know you were doing
it. Right.
So you sought the mystery, and then the mystery is like, okay, here I am. And then you can't get rid of the mystery.
No. The mystery likes you too much.
The mystery is like, let's sit down and discuss my mystery.
Let's get married.
That's right. Let's sit down. And so then you think, well, maybe I need to go on a retreat somewhere. It's like, nope, more mystery. That's what you're going to get.
Right. So, we found that it was tied everywhere, everything. I mean, we even were watching shows from the 1980s, and the storyline just kept popping up over and over again.
It's like identifying an archetype. And once you see that archetype in this particular domain, the archetype really looks hard at you.
Yeah.
Because you're expected to play a role because you've already kind of signed up for it.
You did unwittingly.
Unwittingly, you've already kind of said, hey, I would love to do the archetype of this thing, which is what drew you to it in the first place, because you were trying to figure it out.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what happened. And it became very, very unsettling to us, to the point where, we couldn't go outside anymore. And it was disturbing. I mean, it got pretty serious for us, where I think that it wasn't quite as bad for me as it was for you. Because your analytical brain was seeing far more than I was. And I can turn it off a little bit, but I knew the archetype so well that I could see it as well, but it was really, really intense for you. So what happened was, is we started to realize that in the world, there's many different archetypes, but and many different spiritual traditions and religions, and pretty much what we figured out is that all of them require a sacrifice.
Yeah, basically it's going to usually be male for the female, which is partially why I think it was a more intense experience for me.
Well, we discovered that with the Bowie show when we kind of unveiled all of that.
And now Prince.
Yes, and now Prince, which is very interesting, which we'll get into in a little bit maybe if we have time. But so I realized that I believe that what it was, all this was showing us, even if it was meant to be a trap, is that it was showing us that we are actually in hell. That was our realization, is that this is hell.
Well, it took us a little while, but yeah, basically you could fundamentally call this hell and get away with it.
Right. And so the way I'm looking at it is that we're all here in hell, and there's different levels of hell. Of course, you can get to worse levels, but this is one level of hell, and there's different people are sentenced in this hell differently.
Or caught up in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of see, like, some people don't have it as bad as others. Some are happier, some are sadder. So I think there's different levels, you know, sentencing, so to speak.
I think it's more people are more unaware. Like, a lot of people that look happy that, you know, society might deem successful, a lot of the times are very miserable.
Well, so. I know. But I mean, on a personal level, there might be some people that are actually happy.
I don't know where those people are.
I'm sure there's a few somewhere.
I don't think so.
I'm sure there is.
Prove it.
So, but anyway, actually it was the logo that is on our nearly sacred site.
But ours is upside down.
Yeah, you got to fix that. But anyway, it's my tattoo actually on my right hand. And I looked down and I said, I see what's happening. What I started to see was that it's an infinity symbol, that we keep reincarnating here over and over and over again back into hell, and that there is one way out. And at the time, I told Joe Bill, I said, the only way I know out of this reincarnation loop that we're in is there's only one way, which is you have to have a sacrifice out, which that, in my case, was Yeshua. That's the only thing I knew of.
Well, I should also preface that I was being hammered on.
If we
fast forward a little bit here.
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't know how deep you want to get into that. But
I'm going to touch on it a bit. Basically, what happened to me was that I was involved in many different things that have kind of a French origin. Like, I was involved in the Masons and whatnot, and I enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. I enjoyed the different events and such, but it became apparent to me that one of the biggest things I've been committed to has always been my own family tree and the things that, you know, need to be happening there, because I know that family and curses go hand in hand pretty frequently, wouldn't you say, Melissa?
Yep.
Thank you for that.
I was leaning back.
That was very,
I was comfortable listening
very
to you.
Very dramatic. So for me, what became pretty evident was there was a lot of I guess for lack of a better way of putting it, I got magically hammered on. And the way I got magically hammered on was kind of like the Wonder Bread analogy, except it was way, way scarier. Like, way scarier. And the reason it was way scarier was because it was borrowing people in my environment and using mm-hmm. them. So, you know, imagine that, if you can, that you've got like 10 people in your environment who you never really met before, and all of a sudden they're all saying the same weird shit to you at the same time, like, or the same basic principle of it. It doesn't make any sense, and you really, what you're seeking is just silence. Like, you kind of want silence to calm yourself down, to just kind of get yourself situated.
Because you're sick of seeing Wonder Bread.
Because you're sick of Wonder Bread. But then everybody's like, go ahead, Wonder Bread. Wonder Bread. Check out Wonder Bread. Check your phone.
Hey, I was walking down the street, yeah, and I heard this Wonder Bread song. You're like,
I just sent you a picture of Wonder Bread. Wonder Bread some more.
Yeah.
So, I think what I would say that was is, you know, the old Christian terminologies, they would talk about the passion, you know, not the Mel Gibson version, but the passion for people that are assuming the Jesus-y sort of role where you're being sacrificed in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that passion's kind of what that looks like. I think that's the beginning
of insanity.
Yeah, it's the beginning of that world tree. And in the end, you're just like, screw it, I'm out. So the movie, what is that movie, the Kabbalah one, Tree of Life?
No, Pi?
No, Tree of Life and Pi. Tree of Life is the one where he has the wife or whatever, and he tries to cure her the whole time.
No, that's The Fountain.
Oh, The Fountain. That's the one I want then. The Fountain. So if you watch The Fountain, there's a kind of a similar storyline there. And, you know, the end is like...
I heard that today, by the way. Yeah. There's Wonder Bread again.
I don't want to give anything away for anybody, but the end...
Don't give it away.
The end kind of blows. No, it doesn't blow.
Not in a spiritual way, if you want to look at it.
It blows in a... Well, I won't get into it, because I don't want to
present it. It makes you cry. It makes me emo every time I watch it, anyway.
But that's the whole point of these mysteries, because if you follow the old path, you don't wind up with a happy ending.
No, it's always tragic.
It's going to be...
It's the Greek gods, all of them. Right. The Roman and Greek gods, all they're tragic.
The Dionysian rites, they get you killed. Yeah. And they get your wife single.
Yeah, so, it's forlorn love. And
if you follow the old Egyptian rites, they get you killed and you're single. If you follow the Bacchus rites, they get you killed and you're... I mean, it's over and over again. And then you just reincarnate in and then you do it all over again.
Right, you keep playing it out.
So... The idea is...
It's very romantic, though, right?
It's really shitty. No, it's that romantic.
So much romance.
Everybody thinks that's romance until they try it out, and then you go, nope, that is not romance. No. So, I think that I would say that from being hammered on in that process, there was so many things going on, and it was very difficult to hold my ground, like any grounding at all. Like, everything was pretty much screaming, sacrifice, you know, there was no... And it wasn't because I was just like, man, I would love to sacrifice. It was more like there was no rest. There was no rest from anything. And even Melissa, my family, everybody got pulled into this thing. And then I just got smashed. So basically, I'm getting to my wit's end, and I'm laying in the bed, and I'm pretty much shaking.
Yeah, you were trembling pretty bad. And I was concerned that I really, at that point, thought I might have to take you to someplace. I didn't know, because I couldn't even console you. So the last thing I knew to even try was, is I realized when I looked down at my tattoo, I saw the infinity symbol with the cross coming out of it. And I said, aha, there's one way out. You have to accept Yeshua's sacrifice, because if you have that sacrifice, then you do not become it.
Which I was not fond of, because I've had a lot of interaction with Jesus-y stuff in the past, and Yahshua and Jesus to me seem to be equivalent things.
Which we found they are not. However, what happened after you accepted the sacrifice of Yeshua?
It backed everything way off of me, like way off of me.
I felt peace.
I felt more peaceful. Mm-hmm. However, there were still little residual things that had to be done. And not to mention that, since we do the business that we do, people were coming in with the exact same problem I had experienced in a different kind of way. So people were coming in, talking, and, you know, had chaos around them in different ways, like cars driving up the wrong street, one-way streets the wrong way. And so there was a lot of...
But what we've realized, it wasn't just our people. It was people all around the world.
And there will
this be... This is happening all over the world. It's not just us.
And there will probably be more as time goes on, because it's sort of a sorting process almost, because the great cycle, if you want to call it that, is happening now.
Right. So we started to see... We were seeing it on a small scale around us, but then we started to see it after we realized what was happening, that this is actually happening worldwide.
So Melissa and I both, I think, ran towards our Jewishy, Hebrewy roots.
We went back to our roots.
Because for us, that's where it kind of was anyway. And after I kind of got over the Christian not really being the same as the other, then it started to kind of make more sense to me. But it took a pretty big jump for me to get there. And it was only after being laid out pretty hard and seeing all the things I saw that I could even get to that spot. Because previous to that, you know, people have tried to witness to me and stuff in a million different kind of ways. I don't really think that's very productive. Like, I think people kind of have to find whatever their path is, and I don't think that...
Right.
I think
people have to work out their karma, and you can't push it on anybody. But anyway, we should probably take a break.
Not yet. Oh. I'm in charge of time.
Oh, sorry. It just felt like it.
It's about time.
Yeah.
So now we should take a break.
Okay.
Because now you just broke the momentum. And we're back after that glorious break.
I'm sure it will be.
That's right.
Can't wait to hear your commercials now.
Oh, yeah. Still the same kind of commercials. Things haven't changed that much.
Okay.
At least I don't think they have. So I guess we were talking a little bit about our hard-righted Hebrew-y roots.
Right. I had kind of already done that back in the day. I started out in Messianic Judaism, and we won't get into that, but I lived that lifestyle for quite a while, many years.
Right. Which, for me, also allowed me to kind of keep the Kabbalah underpinning to myself, you know, that I had to begin with. So.
Right. I had just started branching out into Kabbalah, you know, before I met you. I just started kind of had learning about it.
Which all these mysteries share in common, that they rely heavily on Kabbalah. It seems like any time that you go into any mystery, pretty soon you're going to find Kabbalah.
Yeah, because it is the underpinning of everything, right. Really, what we've realized.
Not to say that it's always used right.
No.
In fact, you can abuse it pretty heavily. And in fact, that may be the number one problem with all this now, is that you've got a lot of people that have some knowledge doing not good things with it.
Right. Using it for magic, dark magic purposes.
Right. Because in that knowledge, there's the possibility of trapping people and ruling them.
Right.
Which is a bad thing to do.
So, yes. So, anyway, we accepted this sacrifice of Yeshua. And, yes, peace came very quickly for me as well. Seemed to back way, way, way off all that anxiety. As a matter of fact, I haven't had any. I've had normal anxiety. But what I realized was after this that I was holding such massive, massive anxiety all the time that I didn't even realize. I mean, I knew I had it. And as a matter of fact, a lot of our store is geared to help people with anxiety because it is such a massive problem now. And I realize now why, because the world itself is literally, well, kind of like under a magic spell, and it's a dark magic spell. This sounds like fairy tales, people. I realize that, but trust me when I say a lot of the stuff that we have found and some other researchers like Court, we had him on the show,
which we hope to have back again.
Has kind of uncovered a lot of this crap that is just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
and it's not just, it's like big time people are doing this stuff. I mean,
yeah, it seems like everything is coming unraveled all at once too, mm-hmm. which is interesting. It's sort of, you know, when they talk about how all the secrets will be revealed and shouted in the heavens, and you'll hear phrases like that, that seems to be what's happening, because I know that discussions like these not too very long ago would not have been occurring at all.
Mm-mm.
The information wouldn't have even have hit anywhere at all. So, It's interesting that it's all coming out of the open. As far as anxiety goes, I would say mine's weighed down, but I still have a certain amount of it. But it has more to do with the state of humanity at this point. Like, it's more...
Right. It's more of a concern for the world than it is an internal...
Right. I don't have that...
running anxiety.
I don't have that as much, but there's still a... There's just an unsettled feeling because there's so many things that are completely out of balance at this point. There's so much going on that's completely... way, way, way abnormal.
What would you like to discuss about the abnormalities that are going on? One of them, we could look, there was another sacrifice, in my opinion.
Prince. It's not a matter of opinion. It was a sacrifice.
It was a hit, for sure, because, well, number one, he was kind of outspoken on a lot of things. He was outspoken on several different conspiracies, so to speak, like chemtrails. And
when we say that it's a hit, we don't necessarily mean someone, you know, took a gun and shot him per se. The funny thing about this magic stuff is you don't have to have that.
I don't know. I'm gonna say this. I don't know if he literally isn't what people didn't come and take him and use him, quote unquote, as a sacrifice. Don't know, or if it's just this, you know, blob of energy that kind of coalesces around a person and takes it. I don't know.
I think it's that same thing that kind of started to happen to me, where that energy sets in, and they're looking for escape from that discomfort, you know,
possibly partially
because it is uncomfortable.
Well, all right, so I don't know. However you want to look at it, anyway, either way. If it is just an energy, or if it's an energy that uses people and gets in them and uses them, then that's kind of how I see it. But it could have claimed him that way as well, I suppose. But it happened when? Right at Passover. So what did we have happen? When's the last time we had a prince that was sacrificed at Passover?
Would that be Yahshua?
That would be the Prince of Peace, right? Sar Shalom.
And he was famously declared, it is done. And yet, it is not done. So why is that, Melissa?
Well, he ended all sacrifices when he said it is finished.
But Prince was sacrificed, so why is that?
Well, it was finished the real way was finished. I don't know, Joe Bill. Why was it? I mean, that other system is still eating people, so to speak.
Because it's only finished if you accept Yahshua. Right. Otherwise, it's not finished. The old ways are still in force.
Right. They're all still in force. So it's kind of like taking on a contract.
Well, it's just like in the Bible when it says that the Torah is still inactive. It's still active. It's not. It hasn't been totally rewritten and overdone.
Right.
Even though you'll hear people say that it has been, that Jesus was new covenant and all that, not really.
He never said that.
Right. Those old laws are still in force.
Right.
And if you happen to be someone who's Christian, but secretly your family's pretty Egyptian and you don't know it, then guess which contract you're going to be under?
Yeah. One that takes lives.
The Egyptian one. So it's not... It's very subtle because you can't always spot these beliefs, and how they play out until it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Right. So people aren't knowingly like, I'm going to Egyptian church now.
Right.
Or my family is, hello, my name is Salem, Ishbad, and I'm from Egypt. It's not like that. What do you mean when you say your family's secretly Egyptian?
Well, it's our society thrives off of a certain set of values, and those values are more economically geared at this point as opposed to life geared. So, for instance, one can make more money if there's deadly disease and war than one can if there's relative peace. And the reason that is so is because as those people are sacrificed, they make money flow through that system because they don't want to die.
Right.
So, in the healthcare side of the equation, when it comes to war, there's also money to be made there for therapy. I mean, it sounds horrible, but it's true. Therapy, weaponizing things, tanks, all these military things that you can make.
Yeah, it's big money.
It perks your economy up considerably. And, I mean, even fossil fuels, which are our main source of economic stability, they are by nature death, dead dinosaurs, dead swamp stuff.
Right, everything's running off of death. Everything.
It's one big industrial death machine. And spiritually, all the systems that sit on top of it have gotten to a point where they value the things that make money, which in reality are the things that promote death.
Mm-hmm.
So GMO food, the argument is, well, to be resistant to disease and all this other stuff. But also, it makes you reliant on that particular company for that seed.
Right.
And who knows what it's going to do to our body? We don't know. We think we know, but we're tinkering around with things that are very complex and thinking we can do better than that, than nature. And I'm not sure that's a very good mentality to adopt because nature, there's death in nature. Nature will kill you. But nature also supports life. Unlike people, it doesn't necessarily... Nature doesn't have a motive in killing you to make a lot of money.
Right. Right.
At least that competition is fair. So what I think happens is, even in our churches and stuff, the Christian churches who are supposed to be these bastions of holiness and stand out, reverence for life, if you believe the company line, they're all basically wanting a lot of death-based things. More than a few churches are happy to preach about hell. More than a few churches are happy to preach about the coming rapture. There's all these different principles, and supposedly you accept Jesus, and then that's that. End of story. You're good to go. Go back and participate in the system that's all diesel fuel and deathy.
And, right. There's no preaching about how we can better our surroundings in our towns and, each other. It's more about, just don't go burn in hell and don't sin and, nothing about like, let's, go work on planting trees and supporting the earth and getting solar up and getting off of fossil fuels. And
ironically, Yeshua has caused a major fracture in what was originally supposed to be not a major fracture, like the death of him. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
So
let's talk about that a bit. Right. Like, let's talk about this whole... Why are we saying the word Yahshua?
I say Yahshua because to me, it makes the most sense. Nobody knows how to pronounce Yahweh, the Tetragrammatron. But I think it's pronounced that way, so I pronounce it that way. There's a great debate about how his name is pronounced. But basically, The way I see it, if you take a shin and smack it in the middle of the Tetragrammaton, then you wind up with Yahshua.
All right, so why not Jesus?
Because Jesus is a Constantine invention, and there's no J in Hebrew. There is no J in Hebrew. It's a Greek derivation.
So this was a guy that was born in the Middle East, in the Jewish system, right. Religion. And he spoke Aramaic and Hebrew. And there is no J. And also, the one thing that always kind of made me wonder was where it said where we shall name him Emmanuel,
right,
which means God is salvation. And then somewhere along the line, he gets this name of Jesus. And I'm like, wait a minute. How did that, what happened there? So the way it made sense to me was Yahshua is literally God is salvation. And Jesus, when I tried to find someone to tell me exactly what it meant, like translation-wise, it doesn't. Like if you go back in the Greek, the closest thing you get to is like Zeus.
Yeah, some people think it means Zeus. Some people think it means Iesus, like in Greek, which is Peter's pronunciation. There's a lot of people that think it means a lot of things, but the bottom line is there's no J in Hebrew. So if you're using a lot of stuff that has J in Hebrew inside of a system, which normal Christianity is, which worships what amounts to old pagan holidays, like Easter, Ishtar, Easter, then...
And Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas and whatever else. Christ Mass, that's how that worked out, by the way. Sounds very Catholic, doesn't it? Then you're not going to really make any headway into anything that message was about all the way. It's been screwed with too much to get much benefit from it. Now, I'm sure there are people that do, or believe that they do, and maybe they do. Maybe they actually get somewhere with it on their path that I don't know about. And if so, kudos to them. But I'm going to say, after the experiences that I've been through, probably not.
Right. So I guess we could probably wrap up this broadcast that kind of gives everybody a basis about where we've been, what happened to us.
You have 9 minutes to wrap it up.
9 minutes. Well, I mean, we don't have to keep it to 9 minutes, but...
Approximately 9 minutes.
Because I'm thinking like what I'd like to do in the future broadcast is talk a little bit more about some of the stuff that we are seeing happening in this world today, in the news, that's kind of leading up to the, well, as many would say, the great cycle is ending,
right?
The end of days.
Our future direction will be to combine these ancient beliefs with a sort of Kabbalistic Hebrew-y slant to show the connection between it all.
Right.
And so our main focus shifts from the mysteries that are French, which are kind of more death-based, I would say, to ones that are more life-based, mainly by necessity, like you have to at this point.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to be dead. So, mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that lightly. I'm not saying it in the sense of you might be dead. I'm saying, if you start to get to a spot where I was, then you will start to experience that thing, and you do not want to do that. So,
right. So, like what's happening in the world today is we're starting to see war uptick. The battles are starting to shake their...
It's too damn hot. Like, the temperature is too hot.
Well, it's not right now, but that's the
weird
thing.
But it was yesterday. It was too hot.
No, 2 hours ago.
Right.
And then now it's cold, and then it's hot, and then there's these
rainy
crazy tornadoes everywhere.
Earthquakes, and it's...
Earthquakes, volcanoes.
It's inconsistent, but there is an explanation for it, and it's all part of the cyclical nature of things. So, people talk about climate change and a million other things, and that's sort of true, but they're not really appreciating the full metaphysical picture. And the Bible actually does give you some pretty heavy hints as to what's happening. You can find it in there.
Yeah, it's actually starting to happen now. As a matter of fact, I just read today that, or just a little bit ago when we took our break, that Israel just killed the head of Hezbollah in Damascus. This is a big biblical prophecy thing where people have been waiting to see this one. It says that Damascus will be destroyed. And Damascus has been one of the oldest, longest running cities in history in all of the world.
Right.
So it's never been destroyed. So this would, if this brings a war to Damascus, I can guarantee it that we are in smack dab of what I believe is the Book of Revelations.
Every road is leading to war at this point anyway. Russia is threatening nuclear war. I mean, everybody.
Yeah, that happened today.
Everybody. I mean, and I say this off the cuff like it's a normal conversation. Yeah. It's like,
oh, hello.
Oh, well, you know, Damascus and the road. And oh, by the way, it's the cunning of the Omar on the Temple Mount. And, you know, there's just all this stuff that
and by the way, for the first time, they took a lamb up there and practiced like doing slaughters and slaughtering. Yeah. Hello. And oh, by the way. Yeah.
We're not doing anything. We're not.
Never mind.
Not doing any lamb
you think this
here.
Is the end of days. No, that's not what it is. Nope. No, don't think that.
This is just normal, everyday stuff right here. And then people come in.
If you think the entire world's under a Dionysian spell, don't know.
No. And a good exemplar of Dionysus is Gene Simmons, who incidentally criticized Prince's death the other day. He said it was pathetic that he killed himself.
What? But,
yeah. I thought that was a pretty dangerous comment.
Wow.
Because, and he said, well, you know, he said it that way, and then he sort of said it's a shame or something, but he said it was pathetic that he killed himself. And I was like, man, if I were Gene Simmons, who's like made his career on Dionysus and stuff, I would be not saying that. Right
now. You better be careful, buddy.
He said, I've never been higher drunk in my life. And I was like, because Dionysus stuff loves to joke. It's like
it's a joker.
It's like the Heath Ledger of jokes.
And they wore masks.
Right.
You know, I used to love Kiss back in the day. I was hardcore into it when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, the Dionysus stuff when you're young is kind of fun, but now it's like all the jokes. No,
the jokes aren't funny anymore.
The jokes are not funny because they're true. And people keep stepping into this stuff. Like, I keep telling them over and over again, like, hey, I know it seems like fun and it's harmless, but you're really actually aligning yourself with this thing. And you don't want to probably do that.
Yeah.
And then they think I'm being a hard ass. And they're like, well, you're no fun. And it's like, look, it's not about fun at this point. Like, this is very serious business. It's not.
Yeah.
It's like Louis C.K. the other night.
But it's like it's like I was telling this girl today. I said, look, it's no fun for us. We got to go around trying to warn people about this crap. Right. And then the next thing you know, she's like, well, this one girl tried to kill herself and so-and-so. And I'm like, hello?
Yeah, like our class has picked a white rose for its symbol. The white rose is a wide symbol for death. So,
oh, my God.
It's like there's this massive invocation that exists and everybody's just like totally obsessed with it everywhere you go. And I don't want to begrudge people their paths or whatever, but there is a certain point where it's like, look, you know, this, like Louis C.K. there, we were watching him, his ending comment was, you know, we have these cell phones basically because somebody else in a foreign country, they've got these suicide nets because they make them labor and slave away so we can text message somebody while we take a shit, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's gross, really, if you think it's not funny.
And we laugh at it because it's like,
there are people dying so we can do that.
It's so self-evidently true, but it is true. It is true. It's not gross. Really, at some point, the joke is on us. The joke is on us because we're not really doing anything to try to change that. It's just like, oh, well, yeah, that's how it is.
Right.
This is the way the world is. And we all do that. And we keep doing it. And we keep doing it. And we don't know what we're doing to ourselves with the radiation from the cell phones. We got no idea. Yeah. We don't know what we're doing to our kids. We don't know. We have no idea. They stare at phones. Yeah, they don't interact.
Yeah. Grandkids, 10 years old, staring. He stares into this phone all day. It just, I can't take it. So anyway,
there's a whole disconnect. And so once I've gone through this process, I was kind of counter a lot of things anyway, but I've become even more counter than I was to start with. Simply because I'm beginning to realize.
So counter, we want to move into the woods and say screw it.
I kind of had that to begin with. But,
but now I do.
But I've gotten more that way. And the reason the woods appeal to me is because they're real.
Yes, real.
They are real and they are nature.
Nature is real.
And they're not fabricated or branded, designed to make me, you know, obsess about Wonder Bread, which doesn't exist anyway. You know,
right. Melissa? Yeah, I yawned. Sorry.
Oh. Yeah, it's like it doesn't make you do that because nature isn't designed to trap you in there like that.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, all right. So our future, like we're going to be heading more towards maybe some Bible prophecy, world events, and maybe some teachings on.
And linkages with ancient cultures as well. Like when court comes on. When court comes on, inevitably, we'll start.
Yeah, because he's got some really interesting things to talk about in California and Mount Shasta.
And if you know, have questions, then I can tell you where the linkages are in those cultures and why. And we can discuss shamanism and whatever. It's not like a major jump in the sense that we're just not going to be obsessing on those mysteries anymore.
Yeah, we're going to get off the mysteries, but
Because we've already got those. We're good on that.
We're good on that.
Don't need any more mystery. Nope. I've had enough Wonder Bread. I have quite enough.
All right. Well, it was good to be back. I was happy to record again, and that's all. That's all I have to say.
That all you have to say?
That's it. Just.
Well, in closing, it's been an adventure, and I'm looking forward to doing some more broadcasts because these are fun.
It is. Okay.
And I don't have to repeat it 20 times either.
Yeah. And so I'm signing off. I'm Melissa Sims.
I'm Joe Bell Schertzinger.
Until next time.
Bye-bye. It's that part of the show where we wind it all up and read the credits. They're pretty simple this time around. Of course, there's our store, alchemyemporiumshop.com, which you can buy all kind of things at, like rocks, crystals, and incense. Our music comes from Steam Power Giraffe. The title of the song is Honeybee, the music box version, which is in the beginning and the ending of the episode.